Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare, SP Angel. You're right, fella.
How are you doing, Justin?
Good. Have you investing any? Have you been selling any this week? Or are you just watching? What have you been doing mainly?
I have to say I was tempted to sell some of these, you know, it's been a tough week, right? It's been quite volatile. And, you know, when you, so I've some gains in the retail stocks that you say to yourself, should I take some of these gains and just see how things happen, you know, how things pan out with the banking crisis that's happening? Is it going to get worse? But then I decided to do nothing, which, you know, sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. So there's no right. But the reason I was thinking is because I want to see how the central banks, what they do this week. So I'm quite pleased with the Fed's quarter point increase and that it wasn't a half point, you know, that they've tapered their they basically calmed down a little bit. And I think some of the wording. I know the markets come off yesterday, you know, the U.S. markets come off and today our markets coming off a bit, but not quite as aggressively, I think, as could have been. Had they done a half point hike, it would have been crazy, in my opinion, and they didn't. And they also didn't do no hike, which I think perversely may have even actually been a bit more caused more turbulence and panic than. They kind of walked the fine line of doing the minimum to stay, you know, within expectations. I think two-thirds expected a quarter point hike. So that's all good. But the language is a little softer, too, in saying, further hikes will be, you know, prior to this announcement, they were the language in the post-hike press conference was a bit more aggressive. So I think they've toned down the aggressive nature of hikes to come. So we might see a couple of quarter point hikes still, but it doesn't feel like it's like higher, longer, you know, that language is starting to dissipate and go away. I don't know if you agree with me, but that my feeling from yesterday's Fed hike is it's a little bit calmer about the future of the rate path, which is what you and I were hoping all along. You know, are we going to level at 5, 5.25, 5.5? Fantastic. You know, that we're done. We're hopefully nearing the end of the cycle.
I think consensus was, I was watching CNBC last night, that they're either done or there's another one, maybe even two at stretch. But also, they've just got to stand. I think also it's coming to the point where they've just got to stand back a bit because they're already sort of, you know, expected, like you said, expect a raise at this event. And what they're trying to do now, I think, is manage market expectations as well. They don't want to create panic. And like I said, by doing nothing, it'd have been a complete U-turn from what they'd suggested like 2 weeks earlier, and that would create a panic. So I think now they have the breathing space to say maybe we even pause the next one or do another quarter percent, because you know, they've got to stand back a little bit and say, OK, what problems have we created in the market? But also, like I said, the tightening is also happening via banks now. You know, so they're doing the work for the Fed. So the banks will, you know, are being more cautious about loaning. Loans are more expensive anyway. This will create a bit of a downturn in GDP and just growth. And so that in itself will dampen inflation down. But if I think they do see an adverse reaction, you know, and job layoffs happening, massive numbers, then they'll have to start stimulating again, and that'll be good for the markets. But between then and now, I don't know what's going to, you know, what will happen first? Will the markets start, if we get bad numbers out on inflation and bad numbers on jobs, and then they're in a bit of a trouble, aren't they? You think, oh my words, we got bad inflation, bad job numbers. What do we do? So, you know, so it's that uncertainty. Because if you do get both those coming in, like at the moment, the jobs market is okay, but it's a lagging factor.
That would be stagflation. And that's the worst. that's the worst combination.
That's them messing up on both their mandates. Literally, you got high prices and not high employment. So they've messed up on both counts. How do you correct that? So I think at the moment I'm literally still, you know, at 40% cash. Positions I have, I've got a lot more positions, more spread widely. I've got quite a few, like I said, 40% probably dividend payers, which I think are very good businesses. I'm happy, you know, that they're in a sort of uptrend or they're in a sideways movement. I'm happy to collect and reinvest, you know, because I was looking at some stats on dividend reinvesting, and I don't think it'll be a blowout year in the next 12 months at all. I think we'll have these figures where you'll get inflation come in worse than expected sometimes, like we had yesterday, and the markets will wobble, and then you may have some better readouts. But until we get a trend of downward, like 2 or 3 maybe readouts of inflation that are going down, I don't think the markets will start to rally. You know, I think it'll be hard work. You'll get some, you know, individual specific opportunities within the market, of course, where stocks will rally. But indices-wise, I think it'll be a range. And that's why I'm largely focusing towards, you know, higher market cap, you know, cash-generative stocks that are paying a dividend, because I think that's a way to not lose money, but, you know, keep the money there and maybe even earn a bit of money. So that's what I'm doing. But I'm also looking at, you know, like I said, microcaps and hope pipe potential stocks. So, in fact, there's a stat here is very interesting. If you'd invested £1,000 in a fund that tracks all the companies in the UK's FTSE All Share Index on the 31st of August 1998 and taken the dividends as income, your investment would be worth £1,600, right, by August 2018. So that's in, what, 20 years. However, if you'd reinvested those dividends, that same £1,000 would be worth £3,268. So you're talking about a 68% gain taking the income or 226% gain reinvesting. So that's what I'm going to do for the next couple of years on a couple of big cap stocks, and then I'm also going to be looking for special situations, you know, in micro cap stocks as well, but I've got some mid caps as well. But yeah, I want to be earning to hold stocks, I want to be earning some income there and reinvesting it. So I just feel you've got to change sometimes when the market changes and the environment has changed massively. We've gone from, you know, really cheap money, which have fueled highly speculative stocks and hope pipe potential stocks, and they've done, you know, 100% in a couple of months, and now it's not like that. I don't think it's going to be like that for a while, and I think there will be a certain companies doing that, but generally not. And I think you've got to change you've got to cut your cloth, basically, to the way, you know, and that's what I'm doing, you know.
I agree. I think having a few dividend players is always a good thing. And there's some high yielding dividend players that are quite relatively safe. I mean, unless the market craters. But yeah, you know, like some of the asset managers are paying pretty high dividends. I think LNG, MNG, you know, these are stocks that I hold in my SIP, in my, you know, long-term pension, you know, things. But they pay good dividends, I think 7 to 9%, which isn't bad. Mm. Now, again, maybe that's because they think that, you know, the market thinks that they're overexposed to a market blow up, right? If a market goes down, their assets, their AUM drops, right? Mm. So, you know, they become at risk, if you like. But I guess that boils down to the question, do we think there's going to be a blow up in the market? There almost was with the SVB and Credit Suisse blow ups, right? So, you know, and this brings me back to kind of this whole debate about the broader market, in that you can't forecast, you know, these out of left field, you know, events like SVB blowing up. That, the, you know, the that crisis came on pretty quickly and was hopefully resolved pretty quickly in the same space, and hopefully we'll have a bit of stability in the market. But to your point about kind of markets going sideways, I think we're coming to the, it feels like we're coming to the end of the rate cycle. So the cycle of raising rates feels like we're nearing the end of it. And this is a point you and I have discussed for some time now. Going from 0 to 5% was the big jump over the last 12 months. Whether we have a quarter point, 2 quarter points, or no more quarter points is largely irrelevant now. You know what I mean? So the heavy lifting has already been done. The market knows the heavy lifting's been done. And now we're debating whether there's going to be a quarter point or not anymore. And it's, to me, that's irrelevant, right? It's not 5.25 that changes anything.
It's zero to five,
right? So yeah. Here we are. We know where we are in the cycle, and it feels like it's coming to an end. But there is one thing that, you know, is still a fact, and I think it's kind of largely been ignored in this rate cycle, is how much QE is still out there. So, yes, they're doing the quantitative tightening, but the Fed balance sheet is still massive. So there's still a lot of money sloshing around in the system. Do you see what I mean? So
yeah, but my concern, I understand the incremental rises are not going to be any bigger anymore, but the effect that 5%, you know, interest rate has on companies, for example, with debt, is going to be there for a long time. Unless the Fed cuts tomorrow, you know, back down to zero, you know, they're not going to go down slowly. So you've got, first of all, you've got the cost of goods have gone up for many companies. Then you've got the cost of borrowing has gone up. So their margins are squeezed. So then, you know, you've got consumers buying less. You've got companies making less money. And so something is going to have to give. And I think, was SVB a one-off? Pretty much not.
We've seen banks being cheap for a while.
Banks have been cheap for a while. We know sort of why now they have been cheap, because there's probably some other, you know, some black holes in their balance sheets, you know, investing in the same kind of stuff SVB did. And so I think the banks are going to have a bit more pain, and that's not going to be good for the general economy, because they're not going to loan as much. And so I do think we're going to have a hard time of it, GDP-wise, growth-wise, for a while. And you've got to try and find companies that are not going to be affected by that. First of all, look at companies with, you know, if they're earning money and they've got no debt. You don't want debt. I mean, trying to avoid debt at all costs. But like I said, you want good margins and all that stuff. So it's a different environment. I just think we're going to be slowing down. The economy is not going to be speeding up, because we've got these costs, input costs, and, you know, cost of capital, which is going to be around for a long time. So be careful what you invest. I've said to Paul Hill, an equity analyst, just now, it makes you become a better investor, this market, because you've got to be very selective of what you're investing in. And you've also got to manage your position sizes as well, because, you know, you can take a hit. And so if you want to risk that money, you've got to make sure you're erring on the side of caution a little bit. And that general sentiment plays out across the market, and then you don't get massive inflows. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a tough market for a while. And I until we see a trending down of that inflation, and I mean 2-3, you know, data points showing it going down, I don't think the market's going to rally. There will be special situations, of course, where you can earn good money, but it's going to be harder, I think, you know, generally.
I just throw a kind of, I'm not trying to be...
devil's advocate. Be the devil's advocate.
Just play the devil's advocate for a second. So rates have topped. I think they're nearing the top, okay? You're right that there's a lag effect and still has to ripple through the economy. And as it's doing so, it's breaking things like the banks that we've seen go under. Okay, so I completely agree with that. There's still a lag effect on the market. And then the broken banks lead the other banks to pull back on credit. So that also slows the economy. All agreed. That makes sense. Is it enough to cause a recession? Possibly. Still being debated. We're still talking about the recession that hasn't arrived. We're going now 18 months on, and we're still talking about the recession. But fair enough. These are real breaks on the economy, and it's true. And a banking crisis, or the threat of one, certainly is, for sure. And I actually think there are other things that can break should they keep raising rates indiscriminately, which they're not doing anymore because they've realized the dangers of that, right? So, but the commercial real estate market is a danger point, and, you know, things could break elsewhere, right? And they still can, even with rates where they are today. So I think being cautious, you know, central banks are doing the right thing in saying, you know, we'll watch and see now, wait and see until this fully, you know, plays out, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where we are today, okay? But the other thing that's out there is the $8 trillion in quantitative easing, right? So, you know, I'm exaggerating there, but the Fed balance sheet has, you know, blown up over the last 15 years since 2008. And there have been several rounds of QE, and then the latest one being after COVID. And the way they're running it down, the Bank of England is trying to sell bonds, and, you know, people are telling them, don't do that anymore because the current, you know, banking situation. But in the U.S., they're just letting it roll off the balance sheet, which is still huge sums of money being in. That's the quantitative tightening you were talking about. Yeah. Is it's just rolling off the balance sheet as these bonds mature, right? Mm. I mean, that's a long process, right? There's big sums rolling off, but they pale in comparison to the total balance sheet, right? The $8 trillion or whatever the number is. But my main point on that is that there's still a huge amount of money in the system. And that money is looking for a place, a home, right? So in a panic like the banking crisis that we just had, a lot of it went into money markets, and that's what we've seen. We've seen money market funds, you know, basically explode. Okay, mm-hmm. But they won't sit there indefinitely. And then all of a sudden, if things calm down, that money comes back out of money markets, and it has to go somewhere. And that's where I think, you know, maybe going sideways for 5 years, like some people are saying, may not happen. Unless the Fed turned around and said, okay, fantastic, we're done with the rate cycle. We're going to start to do quantitative tightening for real and start buying, you know, start reversing the balance sheet. I don't think they're going to do that. So my main point is, let's not forget the trillions of dollars out there that are looking for a home, okay? And the minute things stabilize, they tend to find a home, and one of those homes is equities. So I'm not 100% convinced things are going to go sideways indefinitely.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, what we'll have, I think, like I said, that the dual mandate of the Fed is price stability and maximum employment, you know, as much as they can get. Now, if employment starts taking a hit, they're going to have to ease up on the other side of it. What's more important to them, you know? And employment is political, you know, it really is, and it's a lot more emotional than inflation. So, yeah, I think something's going to have to give. But in the meantime, there's some volatility, you know. But on individual stocks,
there's
volatility. Yeah, yeah. On individual stocks, I think there are opportunities out there right now, especially in med tech spaces that have been hammered, absolutely hammered. So, you know, my thoughts are, I hold a few, and I've, you know, been tentatively not big positions at all. I'm talking like 1-2% total portfolio value, but I've got to make sure they've got plenty of cash. They're heading to commercialization in some way, and you know, they don't have to raise at least for 12 months, at least, if they have to raise at all. You know, so on the risker side of things, that's where I'm going. But on, like I said, on the safer side of things, I'm going with you know, decent companies that are growing, that have dividends or pay dividends. But there are plenty of, you know, microcap stocks out there that you think, wow, this is, you wouldn't got this anywhere near these valuations, but they weren't even a couple of years ago, you know. But and they're not as advanced as they are now in their strategies, you know. So yeah,
I agree with you. I completely agree with you. I think the next phase of risk, I mean, you and I were talking about this, kind of the next places I'll be buying is in that space of companies that have refinanced, and now they're even below their latest placing prices, right? So they've refinanced and they're cheaper than their. I mean, I'm talking about companies like, okay, you know, I keep harping on about Omega Diagnostics, Deep Verge. Yourgene now is beneath the placing price. Creo, not beneath the placing price, but have substantially refinanced. There's a couple of companies, Shield Therapeutics, now below the placing price that they had. They refinanced at 6P. And then, you know, that's a company that's a good example, you know, entering commercialization. Right. Yeah. You know,
Things as well. Like I keep my hands. Things like you know, Verici got one watch list. So I've got a special MD on my watch list. You know, things like that. They've got cash, and they're getting towards commercialization. And can they see through? If you think this market's going to be volatile for the next 12 months, have they got enough cash for 12 months or more? And most of these companies have.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Correct. Verici does. Yeah, Trellis does. Spectral has BARDA. We talked about it last week. A big granting agency that funds their R&D. I mean, you're right. There's those are three more right there, and they're all very good value right now. Absolutely, like rock bottom share prices.
But that's not to say they can't go any lower, because this market is dreadful. It doesn't appreciate anything, you know. If you're going to take any position in these stocks, I would say very small, because there's plenty of time. You're not going to see the rallies we saw like we had like 2-3 years back when we were, you know, towards the height of a bull market. It's not going to happen. So you've got plenty of time to research and figure out, you know, if they've got enough cash there to last them 12-18 months to get through this difficult time. But therein, as I said, therein lies the opportunity, because they are cheap and they can get cheaper, you know. But then when the market turns, and who knows when it could be, that's when they'll rally very strongly. But if you have the patience and the stomach to handle the volatility, you know, you could do well, you know.
To your point about them getting cheaper, they have gotten cheaper since the last time we spoke almost. Over the last two weeks, a lot of them have gotten a lot cheaper. They used to be above their last refinancing price, and several of them have dropped below it now.
Indeed,
they're getting even cheaper.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of the, but those stocks there worth looking at, you know, put them on your watch list, and like I said, and just research. That's all you need to do in these markets. Just research, and you'll find sometimes, like you say, if you looked at them last time and bought in, and you listen to this podcast, you think, oh, I could have got them cheaper. So that's why you just literally, and that's why, that's the problem with the market. You know, people are sitting back a little bit and not investing. There's no money inflow because it's so gloomy out there.
But the gloominess. The last 2 weeks, we almost had a financial crisis in the last 2 weeks. Like a real one, you know, there was a run on several banks. So that's the reason. But it feels like it's stabilizing. Again, I do think there are other areas that can break. I think commercial real estate is one potential looming danger area, you know, and I think the central banks know that too. And they've just seen one area break, and they think, you know, they're far more acutely aware of what else could break and drag the system down.
It's not isolated instances. They're all interlinked, you know, financially. You know, when one part of the section of a sector breaks, it affects other sectors, even in sentiment, but I mean in more real terms as well. So,
correct.
Cool. All right. So it's good to chat about that. Plenty of stocks research there, and cheers for that, Vadim. And we'll speak you next week.
Excellent. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.